The Witness, a Christmas story by Robert Westall. A great wind blew out of Asia, from that finger of ice that would one day be called Everest. It thundered across white steppes and disturbed the king of Parthia's slumbers. Cyrenius, governor of Syria, tossed and turned, worrying about the Egyptian furniture shipped to Rome 3 days before. Across the desert, the wind blew icy and dry, but when it reached the warmth of Judea, it dropped flurries of snow, and one of them caught the cat as she reached the crest of the stable roof. She crouched, wretched, the wind blowing her fur into wild saucers, exposing points of warm, pink, vulnerable skin. She spat into the wind's face in helpless fury. Her misery was total. She was heavy with kitten. In this, her first year of exile, she was unprepared for the Judean cold. Worse, she couldn't find a dark private place to give birth. Turned out of cellar and byre by servants putting down straw and blankets for extra guests, strangers everywhere. Egypt had been so different. Basking in the sun on the temple terrace, dabbling for fish in the green waters of the temple canal, the manicured hands of the priests who thought it a prayer to stroke her. The common people would hold back the carts while she stepped past. In Egypt, she was a goddess, the spirit of Bastet Ra, mother of the sacred trinity, cat goddess of Bubastis up by the Nile. Parents would sell the hair of their children to bring her offerings, watch with bated breath as she watched, counting the number of times her paw crossed her ear, believing that this foretold the future. This stable was her last hope. Leaking roof, flaking mud walls that let in drafts, old straw full of the smells of other animals. But better than nothing. If she gave birth in the open, the wind would kill the kittens before morning. She leapt to the ground with sickening grunt, yet even in her wretchedness, she was graceful. Golden, long-legged, huge-eared. In the doorway, she spat again. People even here, poor people too from the smell. Rich strangers were sometimes well enough. Their perfumes reminded her of the temple. They might stroke her, feed her from their own rich food bowls, but poor people drove her out with shouts and blows. She still couldn't understand why her world had changed. One morning she had been lured from the temple by the breeze from the quayside. Lost in a dream of fish, she had met a bearded stranger in the alley. She had paused, one foot uplifted, waiting for him to step aside. Instead, rough hands seized her and thrust her into the sudden darkness of a sack. Such outrage! And then such endless blind jogging, such sickness, such hunger, thirst, and the unbearable smell of her own filth, such useless gnawing and clawing to escape. Finally, rough, guttural voices and the chink of coins. Sure, she's good at killing rats. Good. She's the reason there's always corn in Egypt. Have you never seen the Egyptian granaries? How do you think they keep rats out? These creatures are such ratters. The Egyptians worship them. The other man made a noise of disgust deep in his throat. You're asking me to take a devil of Kenna into my house. Better a devil than rats, brother. The price of this particular devil is still 7 denarii. If the Egyptians had found her in my baggage, they would have slain me. Her sack was rudely thrust into ruder hands. The neck was pulled open and she was tipped onto a mud floor so hard it hurt her paws. And then a door slammed and she was in the dark again. She sat down and washed her shoulder to calm herself. Suddenly, a rustling among the straw made her ears prick. At least she would not go hungry. When she'd killed and fed, she found a hole in the wall and rapidly enlarged it. Outside, in an utterly strange, blurred landscape and a thousand smells, all alien, she crouched to relieve herself. She was free, but all roads were the same, and none gave even a whiff of Bubastis, no matter how much she widened her nostrils to the breeze. And from that day, her prison became her safe place and hunting ground. Her new owner, picking over the remains of her kills, was well enough pleased and ignored her. Others were less kind. When she descended to the ground, the men cursed and kicked her, and children threw stones, and so she learned to keep to the rooftops and the night. But when the weight grew in her belly and the flurry of kicking inside warned her that the time had come to find a safer place, still she knew she must not stay in that barn. She had turned away from the stable door when an even crueler blast of wind caught her, at the same time as the first contraction in her belly. Making the bitterest of choices, she turned again and slipped inside. It was dark, but to her eyes, clear as crystal. Near the door, a plough ox chewed the cud lazily, lying half on its side. The straw where it lay was thick and clean, but no good for a nest. The creature might roll, crushing mother and kitten altogether in the moment of birth. Further in, a grey donkey stamped. A striped blanket had been thrown over its back, and a man fussed around it with furrowed brow and a cross, anxious voice. His breath and the donkey steamed together in the frosty air. And further in still, a woman lay on straw, not so thick and clean as the ox's bed. A lamp gave her light and enough warmth to hold her hands out to, and there was a patch of shadow in the corner behind. The cat crept forward, silently, sagging belly pressed close to the floor. But the man saw her, shouted, reached for a long stick. He blocked her retreat. She leapt into the shadowed corner, back arched and teeth bared. The man advanced, but the woman put up her hand. "Nay, have mercy, she's in the same plight as myself. Are we so poor we can't share what we have? Dirty things, if the child should be born tonight, they lie on children's faces and steal their breath. Nay, she will soon have enough to keep her busy. And see, she's clean. She's the cleanest thing in this poor place." The man turned, spreading his hands. "I'm sorry. I always stay with my father's cousin when I come here. He must have known I was coming for the census. So why is this house full of strangers? I will tell you why. Because strangers have money. It is the Romans' fault. They destroy the old ways." "Husband, husband, calm yourself. You're not to blame for your father's cousin. I shall do well enough here." The man grunted, soothed. "But let the little cat stay. She will keep me company. All women find this waiting dreary. See, she's snuggling in." And certainly the cat's fear seemed quite gone. She crouched against the woman's robe, kneading furiously with her forepaws. The cat could not understand it. She could still feel the drafts catching at her fur, yet she was deliciously warm. The spiky straw seemed as soft as a silken temple cushion, and though the lamp guttered, the room seemed bathed in golden light, brighter than the sun on the temple of Bastet Ra. She slowly crept up the robe till her nose rested against the woman's neck. But the woman formed a nest in the straw of the dark corner and put the cat into it, and there presently two kittens were born. Two only, for the winter gods had been merciful. She purred with pleasure at having company during the birth. In the temple at such times, she-cats were never left alone. Licked dry, the kittens began to purr also, tiny bee-like buzzings, and thus contented, they must all have slept.